including the pieces that I'm going to show you here.
He apparently he can talk and draw, but Jeff here is just you're not able.
His, oh God, I'm done.
I'm done. Son of a bitch. You keep going. All right. So. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode here of the Soda Nerds. I hope you guys are doing well. We are doing phenomenal here today. If this is your first time tuning in with us, welcome. And let me introduce ourselves here. On the grand mixing board in the producer desk, we have our man Johnny back there.
Hey, what up?
There we are. And then to my right here, I have my brother from another mother, Jeff. He's a good-looking guy.
My name is Jeff.
His name is Jeff. And I'm Ben. Today we'll be hosting our very special guest, an awesome man, the myth, the legend himself, Tim Odlin.
Hello. So,
welcome, Tim. I'm glad to have you back here. I know the boys had you last time, but I'm the comic geek.
Okay.
So I'm kind of like been the fanboy on this. I'm very excited to have you back. So thank you for coming in. Now, last time we had talked, you had just began right before your release of Beware the Eye of Odin. Now, congratulations on all the success you've had with this. This has been a great comic. I got to tell you, the artistry on this was perfect, and you did all the artistry work on this, and most of the coloring, correct?
Well, I did an issue of coloring.
Okay.
It's 160 pages. I did about 60 pages.
Okay. That's time consuming in itself. So out of doing this book, what was something that you've learned? Because this was your first major comic book that you've done. So what was the walk away from this?
Oh, I learned so much. I mean, I don't know. Just taking something from the beginning all the way through legit production, you know, having print ready files and all that. It's just like learning every step. So I don't know. The major thing that I learned is, I mean, if you open up any comics page, the front page where they have the credits, there's always a bunch of names.
Oh yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And if it's one dude doing everything, it's going to take forever.
Right.
And so there's a reason why there's more than one person doing a comic. And so this one, I wanted to do everything, but I had to learn that it's probably a better idea to rely on other people to help you or it'll never get done.
Yeah. The list
so
on that.
And, you know, the colorist, Michelle Mattson, who colored the majority of it, it wouldn't have got done without her. I mean, she's awesome. You know, she matched exactly what we wanted and was perfect. And I got to say,
that is one of my favorite pages. I love the two-page spreads when you do that kind of stuff. That's great. Your trolls are just stellar.
Thanks.
I mean, I remember when you were at the comic book store and promoting your comic book here, you were doing troll sketches. And I was lucky enough to grab one of these. These are phenomenal. Just the detail on these things are great.
Just on a giveaway sketch too. I mean, you can tell it was done with a lot of like effort and quality. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a lot of fun to do a troll. You don't have to get everything perfect. You can just go throw a few eyeballs in there, you know, mangled nose.
That is a good
point. They're a lot of fun to draw. So
very cool. Well, I know that, this was a big project for you, and I know you've been working on a lot of other projects, too. Most recently, I saw you working on some of the Mars Attacks cards that you were giving out. What was that all about?
I did a bunch of Mars Attacks sketch cards, and this is the second time I've done it, but you do a bunch of sketch cards, and then you send them back to the Tops or whoever's publishing them, and they randomly put them in the card packs. So it's like a bonus thing, but they pay you for each card, and it's really small, but it's just kind of a fun thing to do.
So there's actual like collector cards for the Mars Attacks.
Yeah. So like you okay. can like just get a pack and then open it up and there's an original sketch card in there, one of a kind, where you're like, whoa.
See, I didn't even know that existed because I was kind of going, where are these sketch cards going? How do I get my hands on stuff like that?
So that's the hard way to get it.
Okay.
They can't pay a whole lot for each card for the artist. So if you just took what they paid you, it really wouldn't be worth anything, but they give you some blank cards for yourself that you can turn around and sell. Right. So you could commission an artist if you were a fan and you knew that they were doing sketch cards, you could probably contact them and say, I want a Mars Attacks one, and then get your custom card made or whatever. So it makes it worth it for me. So I get like whatever they pay me, and then I can resell to the other sketch cards to fans. So,
and this isn't your first time working with Mars Attacks cards, because I have the three originals that are connected, and I'm actually kicking myself in the butt right now because I actually have them upstairs in my bedroom in a frame. So, but yeah, just the connecting card set that you have there, that was really stellar. Great detail on those. So that was a few years back that you worked on that project. Yeah. I know you've been doing recently, you've been doing a lot more of the, what do you call those, seminars or whatnot, teaching and going around. And
I did a few of those.
Yeah. We caught one at the library, and that was really cool. That was informational for me because I didn't know a lot of the stuff that you're talking about, and just the piece by piece slides on what goes into making these comics. Yeah. But I was truly blown away that, I mean, this was your first major comic, but I didn't know you did other comics as well.
Yeah.
So what other ones have you been working on, or had you worked on beforehand?
Well, when you're a kid, you like see comic books and you're like, someone drew this. And then you're like, I want to draw it. I want to draw me a comic or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then you draw it, and then you look at your comic that you just spent all this time on with colored pencil. And then you look at the comic that you bought and you're like, these aren't the same. I must not be good. But we don't realize is the guy who did the professional comic has been drawing for whatever, 30 years straight, you know? Right. And so, I mean, I forgot what your question was, but...
well, what other, I mean, were the comics, I mean...
Yeah, I didn't just start with this and then get it published, right? So what I did was like, I guess what you would do is start small instead of doing some giant 100-page graphic novel. Okay. Do something small, like an 8-pager, and then once you do that and finish that, maybe try something a little bit longer. And every time you do these smaller projects and they get longer and longer, you get more confidence, you know?
All right. So if you were to start at the beginning, you know, let's just say, you know, Jeff's son recently just graduated, okay? Not a clue what he's going to do, but let's just say he was a great artist. What would be his, like, where would he point out to go? Would he go into a college, or would he go, where would he contact? Because, I mean, so many
of these artists. If he wanted to be a comic book artist, or?
Yeah, I mean, like, when you were doing your seminar at the library there, one of my questions I wanted to ask is, like, where is that starting point? Because there were so many talented artists that were, you know, enjoying what you were doing, but it's just kind of, where is that first start point to kind of get your foot in the door to go in that direction? What would you recommend on that?
It's kind of hard because, I mean, if you want to be a famous actor, it's a hard decision to make because it's like, not everyone's a famous actor. What are you making that choice for? That's probably not going to happen.
Right.
But if that's your dream, go for it. But what I would say is, go for your dream, but also, I mean, if have a falling back thing and don't make it to where it's I can just always do graphic design, but you got to make the decision that I'm going for number A no matter what.
Okay.
But what skills can I learn along the way that will help me if that dissolves into nothing? I can still survive. You know? So, I mean, it's a hard thing to.
Well, I know you're a graphic artist by trade.
Yeah.
You know, did you get into that before you went into the comic realm? Or was that kind of your door in that you're like, well, I do graphic art here. And then you meet some people that got you into it.
Yeah, it's a weird, windy road. I think if I was just going to give someone advice on that, I would say go for your number one and be serious about it.
Okay.
Don't just say, well, maybe I'll do this one day. You got to say, what do I need to do? What do I need to learn to get there, right? And then, I mean, my path was I was like, okay, my plan B is to be a graphic designer. And I started pursuing that, and then I got into college, and then I kind of got wrapped up into that, trying to make that work and make money.
Okay.
And I did. I made money, and that's strong security for me and to live my life and stuff. But I think if I was to do it again, I would put that behind myself and say, I'm going to be serious about comics and I'm just going to go for it right away. And I don't know. I mean, it's just a hard thing to do. You just got to make the decision. Like, I'm going to do this.
Well, once you made that decision, like, what was, like, looking back at it now, if you were to, you have that decision and you're going to go directly into comics.
Yeah.
What would be that starting point? Like, if you were to tell your, you know, 18-year-old self or your 20-year-old self, you're going after comics.
Yeah.
And you didn't have that option of graphic.
Yeah.
I mean, is there certain clubs or certain places that you can, like, would direct you? I mean, from your knowledge of your history, I mean, what would you recommend?
What I would recommend is, I mean, get online. If you want to make comics, make a comic. If it's not professional, make another one and make another one, you know? And the more you make it, you realize, wait, I do want to do this. And, or you'll figure out, yeah, I don't really want to do this, you know?
Okay.
So if you make it, and my phone never goes off ever. No one ever calls me. And
It's not Jeff. It's always Jeff.
So annoying. Exactly. That never happens.
No worries.
I'm so sorry.
Hey, at least it's a good ringtone. I mean,
turn this off. Boom. Off.
I was going to ask you, at your presentation at the library, kind of talking about, you know, the how to do a comic book from start to, you know, start to end. You talked about your team, like you have a group of buddies who you get together with. Did you want to share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it kind of ties into what we were talking about is make a comic and put it out there on the web, find a Facebook group, find your people.
Okay.
Because there's other people out there that like comics or like drawing or like manga or like what you like. You got to find them and share, you know, check out what I did. Oh, look what I did. And then once that happens, you can share ideas. You meet other people. Mm. You know, that the thing that I didn't have when I was in college, you know, that I don't know if I'm old, but the internet was not what it is today. Right.
Oh, no.
And it was just a place you go to get research, like a library,
mm-hmm.
where it turned into now like a social place to connect. So if you're into sports comics, who's into sports comics? Are there any sports comics? I don't know. There might be five people, but you could go to the internet and find the place where the people like sports comics and you can make friends. And, oh, yeah, I like this one too, you know? And so the internet is a awesome tool to find your people. And then when you find your people, you can share and you just grow together. And so in my life, my experience was not necessarily through the internet, but just knowing different people and meeting people at like comic shops and stuff here. Mm-hmm. I lived in Utah and I found a group of artists that were serious about making comics.
Okay.
And we started, we called it a drink and draw or a draw night because we didn't do much drinking, but we'd meet together every Tuesday and draw and stuff. and hang out and talk about our projects and stuff and share our ideas. And it really worked out well because sometimes someone would get like a job offer they couldn't do. And they'd be like, I got this job. Do you want to see, I'll reference you. And then, you know, you get a job and then same thing happens to you. You're busy. You get too many jobs and you can like switch things around and you just create this network and this energy of helping each other. You so like cool. learn and grow. So, I mean, in being successful at anything, you know, find your people and help each other. You know, I think that's.
And it sounds like when it comes to comics, like the colorist, I mean, comics aren't just drawing, right? Yeah. Somebody has to create the idea, the story.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, you've talked about that with the Eye of Odin, how somebody came up with the idea and storyboarded it. Well, you probably storyboarded it, but like you said, you get so far, you can't finish it. You need help.
Yeah.
And so then you network and find your, so
yeah.
I think it's cool.
Well, you've made, you know, other, I mean, cause this was legitimately like a small, I mean, it's hard to see on this frame here, but it is a small comic that you have drawn on the back here. But this isn't the first. You've made some other smaller starter comics.
Yeah.
What was one of the first starter comics? Because you were talking about getting in, making something. What was one of your first ones there?
So I brought these. And so what I did was, this is a 2010, I believe. And what I did was, I just started small. I mean, I was like, I don't need some giant story. I'm just going to see if I can.
So that's a folding board comic. It's 3 pages long.
It's 4 pages.
Four pages.
And then this is a spread.
Okay.
So my objective here, I was out of school and I was like, I had a comic book in my hand and I was like, hey, I want to make something as close to this as possible as I can. But I'm not going to do all 22 pages. I'm just going to do 8 pages and try and make it look like a professional comic, right? Okay. So I had, what was it, 4 pages? Mm. That's it, 4 pages. And it's not much of a story, but it's like a punchline thing.
So this one here, you both did the artistry and the storyline or the words for it. Okay.
I did everything, like coloring and everything. And I actually took this to like Comic-Con and I made these. My buddy worked at a card shop making gift card or like birthday cards and stuff.
Okay.
And so we had a bunch of these printed up and then I went to San Diego Comic-Con and handed them out to editors and stuff.
It's been my dream. So that's
cool. And no one contacted me. Yeah. Oh. And like there was some toy companies, but nothing super serious. I did have just a startup publisher contact me, and after talking with them for a while, I found out that they were just blowing air. Like they weren't legit. But I made a thing, and it was six. I mean, for me, it was like, okay, this is starting to look like a comic.
Well, just by looking at this, I just go, this is. I feel the feeling of this is like a comic that would show up in your action figure box.
Yeah,
you know. And reading, you know, actually reading the story that it's, you know, a small child playing with his toys is this whole storyline. You know, it's stellar. I mean, that would be something, to get your foot in the door. You have at least something to start with to kind of get the process down, I suppose. Yeah, that is really cool. Now, with all your, you know, get-togethers with all your other drawers or artists that you have, I mean, there's so many other, you know, styles of books. I never knew there was a 24-hour book deal. So is it literally 24 hours that you have to create this, or how does that all work?
Yeah, I mean, it's anything. It's just to challenge yourself. So that draw group that I was a part of, Draw Night, my friends, that's where I met this guy, Derek Hunter. He worked at a card company. And he's actually doing a backup comic in The Walking Dead right now.
Wow, sweet.
Which is awesome.
Yeah.
But anyways, that's how I met him. And so I had help printing this stuff out, and he's an awesome artist. and there's other guys, but we all decided to do a 24-hour comic challenge. And do you guys know who Scott McCloud is?
The last name sounds familiar.
He's a comic artist, but he wrote, there's a famous book that he wrote, a few books on sequential art and comic book making.
Okay.
He's pretty famous. He's more like an academic comic. I don't know. His books show all different kinds of ways to tell sequential storytelling. And
okay.
Anyways, I don't know if it was him that came up with 24-hour comic challenge or other comic book artists. There was a, I don't remember names, but there was a legend that they were like, could you, if you had to draw a 22-page comic or a 24-page comic mm-hmm. in 24 hours, could you do it? Like a deadline crunch, right? And there's a few guys who've done it, and there's legends of professionals that've done it.
Wow.
So, I mean, and then I don't know if it was a day in the year they would do it, but it was like a challenge that people would do.
So when you did this one, did you have to come up with the storyline as well? And yeah,
it's all up to you. Some guys are like, I'm just going to pre-write the story and then draw 24 pages in 24 hours, right? Some guys are like, no, you got to show up blank and you got to say, you got to make your story there and then, right?
Oh, wow.
And there was a couple comic shops that would host it. They'd get a bunch of pizzas and you'd stay there from, you know, the morning to the next morning and you'd be dead, you know?
So
and you'd try to lay out everything and to get it to where you're like, okay, I got to draw a page this many minutes, you know? Cause if you're starting your story from the beginning, you're not going to have an hour a page.
Right.
And with this one, I tried to do it. And I don't remember how many pages it is. It's not 24.
No, this is a smaller. This is, well, let me count here.
I don't remember where I got. I think it will tell you in the back. But it's failed in that I didn't have 24 pages in 24 hours. But I did have a full story. And
yeah, this is 12 pages on this one.
Yeah, 12 pages.
Yep.
Yeah, and in the back of it, you'll see all my little layouts I did. And that's what I did in the first hour.
That is stellar.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I was just tried to do as much drawing as I could. And once 24 hours was up, I was tired and dead.
Let me see that. Is that a picture of you at the very end?
Yeah. And then...
yeah. And then, I don't know how you get a picture.
Yeah. Well...
We'll have to
I have some throw
some of these pictures up on Facebook and Instagram here, because that's funny. Probably awesome. One of my favorite pictures of you now, Tim.
Zombie.
Yeah.
Zombie picture. Awesome.
Now, okay, so you did all this sketching within the hour and the storyboard of it within an hour.
I think so.
Okay.
And then I basically tried to do a page an hour. And you're with all your buddies and you're joking around, and some guys just start given up and they're just messing around. And,
right.
Right. And then some guys are just crazy good at it. And you're like, what? How did you do that in an hour? Ryan Otley was one of the guys in our thing. And there's a comic called Grizzly Shark. And Sea Bear and Grizzly Shark. And that was 24 hours. And if you look at it, you're just like,
impossible.
What the crap? And he did it twice. No, he did the first, it was like 24 pages, and I think you can still get it. I think there's a trade.
Okay.
And he did two issues of it, and anyways, I think he did it when I was doing that one, and I just remember looking at him and being like, this guy is, he's amazing, right?
Well, I'm impressed by this. And so, okay, so you wrote the words, you came up with storyline, you drew it out, but is it all drawn out like within the 24 hours like this? Or
no, I mean, so I brought the actual pages.
Okay.
And remember, this is like forever ago.
Oh, wow.
This is 2010?
Yeah, 2010 on here.
And I was just out of school, you know? So this is forever ago. But these pages, if you look at them, they're pretty bare. And then once I did that, I later went back and then put them in the computer and did some minor coloring to them just to make it feel a little bit better.
Q-tip that up.
I'm going to set this under. And then, yeah.
Yeah.
Just tip it up. And
tip
then,
it up.
So you can
yeah.
do it. Yeah. Does that help, Johnny?
Yeah. And then colored it my computer later. In the back of that, I made that. But basically, what it was is me saying, I'm just going to take the next step and just make a book with this, right? And I had my buddy who worked at the card company, and we printed out a bunch of these pages, and we made, handmade, I don't remember how many of these little Curse of the Raven books I made. Mm-hmm. But I made a few of them. I sold a bunch of them in comic shops, and I don't think I took that to conventions just because it was a 24-hour comic, and it was like rushed. It wasn't like, this is my best work.
What truly blows me away.
But the thing is, the most important thing is I made a thing and I finished it. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't like my ultimate best effort. All the pieces weren't where they were supposed to be, but it was a finished thing and existed, right? Mm-hmm. And I think every time you do that, you get more confidence, you know?
That's stellar. I mean, this process blows me away that all of this beautiful art, and then it gets brought into this a small comic book that we all get to enjoy, and all the hours that went into this. But then that's where I go, a 24-hour comic, that's a, dude, seriously.
It's a challenge, yeah.
Oh, that, I mean... Rough. Afterwards, did your hand like cramp up and just like, I can't do it anymore?
I just remember you just can't think. That's why you got to plan it in the beginning, because you got to plan it out and say, because this is my course, because by the end, you're just pushing to move your hand and getting the pages get less detailed.
I like this because at least then you can. You know what you're capable of.
Yeah.
You know how far you've pushed yourself, and you know your limits. Yeah. And within that, that's where you can grow and have your comic work and all your artistry just blossom from. That is awesome.
Yeah. So then from that, then the next year, I was like, what was that, 12 pages? Mm-hmm. Then the next year, I was like, I'm going to make a comic that's 22 pages. And then it was this one.
Mad Monkey.
Right?
That is awesome.
And I worked with a friend who wrote it, but I was just like, I'm just going to make the 22-page comic, you know, see how close I can get to a real comic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's black and white, and I don't remember how many we made.
Can I open this?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that was another step.
So then how long did it take you from, because obviously, you know, these ones were a little bit simpler to come by, and that one, the Curse of the Raven, was a 24-hour stint deal.
Yeah.
How long did something like this, where it is more of the comic, you know, length and everything, how long did this one take you to create?
You know what? I don't remember, but I do remember thinking professionals do their 22-page comic in about a month's time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I was trying to stick to that, which maybe it took me 2 months or something to draw that. I don't know. I don't remember.
That's pretty cool.
But, yeah, and it was funny because I took that to San Diego 1 year, and I was in line. I had Robert Kirkman sign some of my comics, and I showed that to him. I gave him a copy, and I was like, maybe he'll get me to draw one of his comics, right?
Nice.
And then at the end, I remember walking by the image booth, and there was a pile of garbage in there, and everything was shutting down, and my comic that I gave to Kirkman was in there, in the garbage, dude. And I was just like...
Oh, that's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So, I'm not drawing comics for Kirkman. I'm drawing them for me.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So, and then now I got an image book. It's not a big famous one, but hey, I got an image comic published. Yeah.
That's far more than many, many, many people can say. I mean, the fact that it's in trade paperback. Oh, Jeff, you got to show this off. So the trade paperback, I love the backsides and the fronts where all the extra artwork that you have on the insides of all the trolls and everything. Because that's where it's just like the characters in the book are not just what's there. I mean, it's all the way in the back. Yeah. It is the characters in the book are just a few of the things you've touched base on, because those other ones are just stellar.
Yeah, character designs and creatures and
you talked about that when we listened at the library to you, and you were just talking about like hundreds of little ogres and little
I came up with a system, like a troll factory to design. Like I had to draw armies of these creatures.
Right.
And so I came up with a system where I could mix and match parts. And it was all in my, I had certain character designs, right? Mm-hmm. And it was in my brain how I could mix and match them. So I didn't need them to be perfect, but I had to come up with a quick way to design different creatures real fast.
Well, see, and I thought that was a clever way. You have, you know, a set of three or four that you had, and then just to be able to mix and match the parts, so you don't have to keep on racking your brain on what new character, new, you know, creature can I create here? And you just would, all right, these are the three basics, and you start taking pieces off and start building something new. And I don't know, that's really cool.
It's pretty fun. It made a lot of fun.
Yeah. It was a very good book. I enjoyed it.
Thanks.
The art seriously made this comic. I love that thing, seriously. But I was kind of wondering if you'd be up for a little bit of a sketch with, you know, maybe our Joe of the room here. Because people don't realize that Jeff here, he has a little tiny artist heart of himself here.
I do.
He actually did a little bit of schooling and he did some art. What was it? Mostly nude drawings, something like
that?
A lot of nude drawings. So, you know.
a lot of nude old men.
Something like that in college.
They were just in my house. I don't know who they were.
So I was wondering, we've seen what you can do in the 24-hour realm, and I was wondering if you'd be up for a 5-minute sketch between the pro and the Joe to see what they can do. It's not a competition at all, but I'm just kind of curious to see the processes, because you being in the industry for so long, how you design and set up your character, the process that you take, comparison to somebody who drew naked men or something in college. So how would that differ, and just seeing the finished products on that? And if you're up for that, I'd be able to show some of your other custom work that this man has done for me. So you down for that at all?
Yeah, let's do it.
Good?
Yeah.
All right.
So my experience was, I just took art and I met my wife in art class.
That's worth it.
Yeah. So it worked out okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably did draw some naked dudes.
Hey, I remember I played football in college, and I had my sketchbook up with me, and I was
whatever your poison is on how you wanna.
I had my utensils. Bag and stuff, and one of my friends in the football locker room was looking through my bag and saw my sketchbook, and he opened it, and there's like these nude drawings, and he was like, "What?" I was like, "Yeah, it's from one of my classes." He's like, "There's a class."
Yeah.
And then next semester, all these football players were trying to sign up for the figure drawing class. That's
awesome. You know, hey, a new artist was, I'm sure, born that day.
Oh yeah.
It just may have been from, you know, the football player and the model.
Hey, they pay pretty good too, being a model in those art college classes.
Yeah, when you're a poor college kid, yeah.
Weren't you a model for one of those?
No, I should have been.
I was too shy, but yeah. I saw what they were paying them, and I was like, I don't know. Would I be there? I mean, what would my mom think? I don't know. But whatever.
So college is to make those kind of decisions, true. Right?
You just want a simple Ninja Turtle or something.
So yeah, I'm just thinking Ninja Turtle, you know, however you want, if it's just a basic body, if it's, you know, a head popping out of a sewer, I don't whatever your artist, you guys do that. But let's get a 5-minute timer on the back screen here. All right.
No, it's
that's mainly official. So I don't go over. So you guys can go.
Okay.
All right, hit it up.
I gotta get this out of my way.
Now, some of this stuff, I understand, is tough for you that are listening to our podcast. So I highly recommend you go to our YouTube channel, Soda Nerds, or
the TikToks. You got to go on YouTube. You have to go on YouTube if you're listening on podcasts, right, Ben? You're saying this part is not going to make any sense for you.
No. So. Otherwise, you know, hey, some of the Instagram stuff or, you know, maybe TikToks. So go find us out on all of those, and then you'll see all these awesome visuals. But back to the awesome story here of how I got an awesome sketch from our man, Tim Oldland. So I met Tim at our local comic book store, Gamer's Den, awesome place. And I kept on having this inkling to get a personal sketch to figure out the best way that I can have it for me. Not just a random character. I've seen his work and it's phenomenal. So some of you guys know, I collect the homage, all the spider homages of the Spider-Man number one done by Todd McFarlane. And so I love this whole stance with the spider webs and all that. So I wanted to see if Tim could create something that I had always dreamed about in a character.
You knew he could.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you knew he could.
Well, after I saw some of his other, knowing he likes some of his horror work, that your scary stuff, monsters.
It's right behind him.
And that whole giant poster.
Yeah, that whole poster.
Yeah, as you can see back there, you guys got to go check out his Instagram page, at Tim Oldland. He has his profile picture is the creature of the Black Lagoon.
Yeah,
on there, right?
What is it? It's at Odland Tim.
At Odland Tim.
It's I apologize. O-D-L-A-N-D Tim.
Yes, go check that out, because seriously, then that way you guys can grasp all of this art, including the pieces that I'm going to show you here.
Apparently he can talk and draw, but Jeff here is just... You're not able.
I'm done.
Son of a bitch. You keep going. All right. So here's what I
got. You got two, man. You still got two minutes and 30 seconds here.
No, I
keep going. Keep going. All right.
So I had a Spider-Man blank, and as you can see on this side here, it's all white, and it was going to be all white on the front here. So I brought this comic book to the Gamer's Den, and I put it in his box, and I said, hey, I know you're a busy guy. You always got all this stuff going on. When you get a chance, I would like to see if you could put together a Spider-Man and a Ghost Rider into one character. And I knew he was busy, but this man drove up that night, grabbed the comic, and then started sending me screenshots of it. I was sleeping, he's just sending me pictures because this man works nights. He gets creative, and dude, you hit this up like a beast. Look at this. Go check it out on his Instagram to really get a feel for this, but it is stellar to have this Spider-Man lit up. You can't even tell all the other major details. He's shooting flames and chains, and it's stellar. This was a blank white comic. So at that, I'm like, all right, I need another one.
Who are we drawing? Mikey, Leo?
It's definitely Leo. God, that's so beautiful, Tim.
You got to keep going, Jeff.
I'm excited to see it.
So at this, then I'm going, all right, I need another sketch here. I need another go. So I had him do a Predator. Not only a Predator, but a Predator in the same homage, but holding a skull from Beware of Venom. So we have him defeated Venom and put Venom in a jar. I love this. he has done so many other works with the Predator that this was important to me. So, dun, yes. Dun, 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 dun. Oh, dude, seriously. It's I just love looking at those.
Just wait till you see his drawing.
Now, well, in this last couple of seconds
Jim.
You got to also understand,
kind of Tim does far away here,
a whole lot of other works. Yeah. Go check out his page. Go look for a commission for him. He does a great job. He makes all sorts of different deals.
Time's up. Pencils down.
Pencils down.
Oh.
This is so beautiful.
It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be finished.
I gotta shake my upper lip here.
See, he's
put a
beast.
Little scruff. Oh wait, they don't have scruff, do they?
They do.
Got scales.
He's still going.
He's got it. Did you just sign your name?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have to know whose is whose.
No. This is.
Ben, why don't you show off Jeff's?
Oh, I totally will.
Show
totally
off Jeff's.
All right. So, this is.
Nice job.
Jeff's sketch, our homie of a Joe here. Settle down, Jeff.
Everything's good. Everything's good. Okay. Everything's good.
It's going to look beautiful.
Just show it off. That's a Ninja Turtle,
that's
right?
Awesome. Hey, that's like, good.
I hearken to my inner childhood.
So yeah, we'll get some close-ups on these on our Instagram and stuff.
Tilt that cover, Ben, tilt that cover down a little bit. Maybe it'll show it a little bit. Like, tilt it forward or something. Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
All right.
It looks like good. Ninja Turtle, right?
Does it, though?
It really does.
You get bonus points for full body.
There you go. That's a full body sketch. Double swords.
Yeah.
And you have the sash that goes across.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, he's got the Mattel design down.
That is the Mattel.
That's probably where I started drawing.
Now, that's really great. Hey, I would put that on my fridge, okay? Right? I want you
my
to know that.
My mom did, too.
I might put that. So
this is good.
This here... is now Tim's.
Wait, have Tim show his.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, good idea.
There's mine.
Yeah, you can hold it back by like your head. So it'll be in focus back. Oh yeah. Look at that thing.
Isn't it good?
Oh yeah, we're gonna post a picture of these two holding their pitchers.
I knew there was a reason for this. It was never about you drawing. It was about humiliating the Joel. And this is what my nudes look like too.
I would not
too.
Be ashamed of this.
This is what my nudes look like too. So I mean.
No.
Hey, this is good.
Yeah.
Now we're going to sit here and Ben's going to draw us a Ninja Turtle.
Oh,
naked.
Okay. I'll draw you a Ninja Turtle. Hang on. We got the pro, the Joe, and now we'll have the schmo do it. All right.
Ben only needs a minute.
That's cool. Let's see here. There's basic
shapes.
So now
we can talk.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Yeah. Thanks, Johnny.
Thanks, Johnny. Appreciate that.
So, back in the day, you showed us you worked for Skull Candy.
Yes.
And I think we talked about that before, but again, you were talking about just to make money and not focusing on your dream.
Yeah.
It's got to be difficult to focus on comics when you're not making money until you start selling stuff.
Yeah.
And then when you're making money, it's so you kind of have to balance that out. You got to make money at some point. Right. And just what was the experience of like, what did you experience from that? Because I like your story and it ends kind of sad.
Yeah, no, that's the struggle is how do you make comics are really hard to make money on these days. And there's all kinds of art jobs where you can make money. And that's the struggle is how do you make your comic and make a living? You know, and I think the only thing you can do is, you know, if you have a dream, you got to make a commitment and just work hard on it. And then these days, I think it's easier to make money as an individual than to get a job at Marvel right away.
Oh, right.
You know, and there's so many ways to get your book printed and made and sold. You know, or you don't even have to sell it. You can just put it up and people read it. And if no one likes it, you're not going to have very many followers. But if you keep going and you're serious about it, maybe, you know, maybe more and more people will follow you. And I don't know. I heard a thing once. You only need like 100 super fans to have a career because,
sure.
You know, if I don't know what the math is, but if you have a certain number of people that buy your book every year, so you have a book come out every year.
Well, I'm one of those.
I mean, I don't know what the formula is, but if there's a certain amount of people who are going to invest a certain amount of money in you every year, how many of those people do you need to make 70 grand a year?
Right.
To make a living.
Yep.
And then you just try and work toward that. It helps to have a spouse that makes money, you know, and you can't just surprise them too and be like, hey, you got to make all the money until I'm famous, you know, because that's not.
Yeah.
But
do you see like the brick and mortar style comic book stores and even like actual paper comics? Do you see that kind of disappearing in time?
Ooh, I don't know about paper. I don't know. I hate to see it, but you know, I was in Walmart today and there's like all these little sections. There's a sections of DVDs for $5 and sections of, I don't know, fidget spinners. And then there's a section, I mean, those things are like everywhere. And then there's a section of manga.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, manga.
Right.
In Walmart, just chilling there. There's tons of them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know the kids that are reading them, but they say that comic books, manga is like 70% of all the money.
Wow.
Or even more. I don't know what this percentage is, but kids are reading comics. Yeah. It's manga, you know?
Yeah, I actually was wondering that same question, whether or not they would disappear, because I know for a while, like Marvel was doing more like an app kind of style, digital comic style. And I was wondering if things would transfer more over to that. And as much as I love reading the comics and everything, I'm also a collector. So that was tough to think of, but I do believe that they actually shut down because they couldn't produce the digitals enough or well enough.
Here's what I mean. I don't know much about anything, but what I have heard is Marvel and DC, they probably make most of their money off not comic books. Off licensing, Batman underwear, Batman t-shirts, Batman this, Batman that, the movies, to license a character. I mean, there's a watch company like, oh, we want to make a Batman watch because people like Batman.
I didn't even think of that.
And then they pay Marvel. And so Marvel's getting all this money from that. That's where all their money's coming from, I would guess, because comic sales are not giant.
Well, I mean, you know, what are comics, you know, about $2-3 a piece, you know? So it's not like, I mean, they can sell millions, but still it's not, you know, the money. So I think my time's up here.
Yeah. Well, I think that money goes into supporting producing the comics. I mean, this may not be true, but this is my theory on it, right?
You know,
Marvel
actually,
and DC. And so they don't need, I mean, these guys, some guys are working their tails off to make a good Batman comic or whatever. But I also think they're better comics out there. I mean, I love the characters and stuff, but I do think that the industry is in a place that's really weird, that it's hard to, it's not self-sustaining or strong. It's just a really weird thing, and that's why
there's been a lot of changes in the last few years for comics that it makes it more difficult for people to hold interest with. Lot of the better storylines have been coming from a lot of the other comics, like Image Comics, and not just the Marvel, DC, the big headers or whatnot. With Boom Comics, Image Comics, they've been putting out some great storylines, and you know, other people don't. Eric July. He created Issam.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that comic?
I have not.
I will send you home with that one.
Okay.
It's my personal copy and it's signed, so I will send that home with you. But the next time we hang out, you can come bring that back. But it's something that he put out because he was you know, he's a radio podcaster, and he was getting upset with the industry, you know, going and becoming so woke with everything and some other issues.
Kind of what they were doing. One of his issues specifically is they take these historical characters and they just like flip them on their head and make them completely different than what the character originally was.
Yeah.
And his, he happens to be a black guy. And he says, like, why are we destroying all these cool black characters? Why aren't we using them? And so nice, cool thing is this is a black dude. Mm-hmm. And it's like they try to fight for diversity in some of these comics, and he's like, you're just making the characters worse by doing that. And so
because it's not genuine.
Right.
Yeah. And he created this comic. I mean, it just whole storyline, whole characters, brand new characters. And that was one of his biggest arguments is we can still make great comics. Why are we taking all these, you know, big hitters, all these big characters and demolishing them and trying to reboot them to something else when we can design something that is stellar? And he did proof of that. His Issam, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing that right. But that book itself sold more comics than Marvel and DC for the entire year.
Hmm.
Just that one. And it was just kind of something he had put across on his radio show, just going, hey, if you're interested in this, I'm creating this. Let's see what this does. See if there's hype for it or not, if there's more interest in something like that, or if it is just with the mainstream, you know? And he actually just came out with a second issue. I do not have that one yet, and I'm thinking about grabbing that one. But I was more blown away at the sales that people were standing up in that sense to go, I'm going to purchase this so much more than the other mainstream of Marvel and DCs and stuff. So I don't know.
It's yeah, you can only have so many versions of Batman. You can only have so many versions of
Spider-Man.
Fill in the blank.
Well, I know. There's a certain thing. I mean, there's another thing they do too is there's so many versions of Spider-Man, which is the one that appeals to you.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's a million versions of Spider-Man, why is he special?
Oh, right.
You know what I mean? Same with Batman. Batman used to be a loner in his cave and he had Robin or whatever. But then now you got the Bat family.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a whole team of X-Men that are like variations on Batman.
Right.
And it's like, well, Batman's diluted because there's all these different versions in the comic, you know, and it happens to villains too. Yeah. You know, all these thing about the different Venoms and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's just, they're telling different stories, right? But they're also diluting it a little bit. And that's, I think, too, the appeal of Marvel and DC. Sometimes the stories and continuity gets so turned around that you're just like, I don't even know where to begin. I don't know what, I like Spider-Man, but
see
what Spider-Man is the comic now and what's he doing? And
as much as I love Spider-Man deeply, I fully agree with you, and it just kind of proves more to the point on, well, we found our cash cow. We're going to keep producing as much as they're going to keep buying for. You know, let's keep making this different version of all these spider people. And yeah, as long as people are keep buying it, let's pop out more. And the sad thing is then you lose the storylines. You lose because it all blurs together, and it's just they're trying to get something for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, I like the stories that have a beginning and end, and there's some good ones. You know, like think of like Dark Knight or Hush, or I mean, when a story has a beginning and end, you can kind of like take it for what it is,
right?
And even if it is a different version, it's like, okay, I got to reset. You know, like okay.
Did you ever read Berserker?
I haven't.
Okay.
I looked into that and I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well,
it looked cool.
I looked into it and, you know, read it mainly to begin with to go, all right, Keanu Reeves is you know, the writer on this. So it's just kind of like, or part writer or whatever. So I kind of wanted to see where his talents throughout the years have taken him. What is he going to create? And now it's going to be a Netflix movie, and then it's going to be a TV show. Yeah, and it's just kind of like, well, you played your cards right on that one, buddy. Yeah, all right, fine. But he did that before the book was even finished. Oh, so right. Yeah, it was already lined up for that. But it's actually not a bad deal. It's very bloody. It's, yeah. You know, it's kind of like John Wick in through yeah. the ages, you know, kind of thing. Yeah. But, it's yeah, not too bad.
So I know we wanted to talk about a little slightly different topic, right? So we're talking about like oversaturation. We're talking about how things are going digital and the digital comics that Marvel had, and that kind of fizzled out. Do you want to?
No. Yeah, I was. Yeah, here. Let me just show off my drawing here first.
That's that better? Good. That's not bad. That's good.
Can you see that, Johnny? I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's.
Hey, he's got his thumb up.
Yeah, it's a figure. Well, sure. Wait a second. I think it was. He's got three fingers, so it's probably his pointer. You know, so.
Okay.
I think it's.
He's missing his. Well, undercarriage there.
Because honestly, undercarriages are tough. I wasn't sure how you did yours, and I wanted to peek, and I was kind of going,
wait, Ben, right, hold yours up again.
Okay.
We got I take a good look, and all right, there
thank
we
you.
Go.
Thank you. Well, you know, we have the pro, the Joe, and the schmo. So, but, you know, this is how, you know, comic books and comic artistry has been throughout the ages, is the sketching, and then it became into the digital notepads and everything. I mean, right. that's a lot what you've been using recently, right? Is more of the digital pads, right?
Yeah, I do a hybrid.
Okay.
So I do thumbnails and layouts digitally because I can move things around, and then I like to tighten things up.
Okay. But that's
analog, and then
that's where a lot of artists have been using those things. Like I see Todd McFarlane using those things, and I just go, all right, so we've evolved into that, but now we've been taking this next giant leap into AI creating all these different characters. I mean, there's different even apps on your phone that you can go, hey, I want a character on this, and it will create. I mean, we've all seen ourselves on different TikTok videos, you can go and map yourself out and it will AI draw you.
Yeah.
And a lot of different AI, I've seen so many different versions of Spider-Man in AI form that it's just kind of like, wow, but is this now our future? Is this where comics and the artistry is heading?
So where is the ethics in that?
Well, I've thought about this a lot.
Okay.
Because, you know, you spend a lot of time learning how to draw something, and then when something comes out that you can just type in cool pose of Spider-Man, boom, and it looks really good, you know, it's a little bit disheartening, and you wonder like, well, what is the future in this, right? So I don't know, I've got a lot of thoughts on that, but if I was to sum it up, I mean, well, first of all, just so we're kind of on the same page, think about if you could, you don't have to spend any time learning how to draw or anything, and say, I want a story with Spider-Man fighting the Hulk in a swamp, right?
Right.
And then that's all the prompts you needed, or you put in whatever prompts you want in it, and I want it to look like Jim Lee drew it, and then you hit a button and 30 seconds later, you got a 22-page comic that looks like Jim Lee drew it, and it's exactly what you wanted to. Now, I don't know how the story works out, but there's, you know, AI story writing and all this. And so then you think of the day where you could do that. And for me as a comic book artist and a comic book lover, part of that is like intriguing, like, whoa, what's that going to be like? What if you could just do that? And then it does break my heart a little bit. But I also think I'm an artist, right? And so I'm going to be biased on that. And then I think how could I make this relate to the general population better? And I think music's a good example. Okay. Because now... I mean, the other day I saw something where they had Johnny Cash singing like
Gangster's Paradise or something.
Oh, really?
And it sounded exactly like Johnny Cash. Yep. And it sounded like a Johnny Cash song that he wrote, right?
Oh, wow.
And so think about that. If you're like, oh, you're an 18-year-old and you're like, oh, I want a song about, I want a love song that sounds like Nirvana. I want it to be a little bit heavy. And whatever you do, you type that into your thing and boom, you got an original Nirvana song that sounds like Kurt Cobain singing exactly the subject matter you want to, but it's an original song.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. You make a whole album in 5 minutes, you know, or whatever your favorite artist is.
Right.
And then if everyone's doing that, who's going to relate to any song anymore? Because we're all vain creatures. You saw how the AI art thing,
mm-hmm.
the first thing it was is painting myself. All right. Painting myself, yeah. And putting it up there in any style. It's my face. It's me. And then these songs are going to be about me, mm-hmm. my life, my girlfriend. And you're not going to be like, dude, check out this song. It's about me driving in my car. You're not going to care about that song. You know what I mean? But I don't know. I'm going off the rails here on it, but
no, those are some valid points. I mean, you kind of lose it. You really do. That's
it's like when you're back in the 80s, a movie would come out and it'd be in the theaters for 6 months, and we could, as kids, you'd see it, and then you go back to the playground, you tell your friends, "Oh, that part in Star Wars was so cool," and you talk about it for 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, or whatever, and you'd see it again, and it mm-hmm. became this cool thing. And then now we get a movie every month and they just fly by and you forget about them. They're not special anymore. Now think times a thousand AI movies that each individual person create. Boom, 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 boom. Nothing's going to be special ever. You know what I mean? It's kind of.
Yeah. It's sad.
It's crazy. It's
terrible to think of that.
I really never thought of it that way
because
I was just going, I mean, how easy would that be? And I look at the industry and just going, all right, fine, these, you know, let's just pick on Marvel because I love them. They're going to lose out on so much money if they start using AI, because at that point, if they're using writers for AI, or AI writers and AI artistries, okay, then sooner or later, people are going to be like, no, I can create my own book. Yeah. And then why am I purchasing your stuff? Why would I be going after your stuff when I can create my own? But then, yes, I never thought about... You lose that essence of, hey, did you see this artwork and blah, 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 and us showing and feeling that same emotion off of that when you're creating your own stuff, then it's just,
So what, miss that. The main, like thinking about all these different possibilities, it's scary. It's interesting. What would a new Beatles song sound like that's about me, you know, or whatever. You know, but I think the main thing, it's got to be regulated. And the main thing is like art, fashion, language, stories, it's all our culture, right?
Right.
And if we don't dictate that, if we leave that up to AI to dictate where we're going in art, in story, in culture, we're going to miss something. Something's going to be left out, because in artificial intelligence, there's not charity. There's not kindness. There's not love. There's not humanity. It's logical decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's what was before. And it's going to really damage the direction of humanity if it's not managed, I think, in art. Because I can see, I mean, you know, you can see a day where it's going to be, the AI is going to be making all the decisions. I mean, if the AI is making decisions about art, we're just going to be the ones plugging in the wires
to the
computer. And it's going to be, this is the fashion of the day.
Right.
You know, this is the cool thing. And humanity's not, we're not in control of where we're going, and AI is.
That's
it damages innovation.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. Ultimately.
It reminds me of Wall-E, right? Where the all of a sudden, like the machine, the big machine, like you said, changes colors, and all of a sudden, like everyone goes from red suits to blue suits, and all their, you know, and the background changes to a different color, just because AI dictates it, and we just blindly follow. I think that's the concern I have is we're gonna lose the spirit and the soul and personality.
Yeah,
it's, I mean, obviously AI is awesome. I was on ChatGPT today, and I typed in "create me a comic book hero," and it made a female one. And I said, "No," I said, "I want a male comic book hero because I just wanted to see what it would do."
Yeah.
And it gave me an entire backstory of them in like 2 seconds, right? And I said, "Write me a book about time travel," and it gave me chapter synopsis of each chapter.
Wow.
It's cool, but it just seemed like you said, I just using it one time, I was like, there's no thought into it. There's nothing emotional in it. It's just printed out whatever Google said.
You just wonder how far it will go. I mean, it's a lot to wonder about, you know?
Well, it's a new frontier on that. I mean, with AI, we have now, see, I'm for and against, but mainly against. I'm not, wait, AI, I'm all for, yeah. but I truly do go, there are some things where it's like, all right, you have, you know, in the medical industries, AI would be great. You know, you can get scanned and it knows better because it's gone through all the other data throughout the entire world on giving you a good situation or whatnot, or a good...
like diagnosis.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. And so for there, I can see where the promise would be. But I think anything that would be artistic, any of the music, the art, the sculpturing, that kind of stuff, you lose so much. I mean, we have 3D printers that can pop out anything. And where's the artistry on the sculpting of the hours, the looking at each stroke or each chisel, you know, you lose so much of the love that goes into something that, you know, it can look cool, but does it actually feel, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
who knows how far they can get with it or how far it will go. But I do think it's going to be hard to decipher. We're not going to just be like, okay, we're not going to have it do art because there's too many.
Right.
Subtle ways that it creeps in. Like people like, oh, I just want a painting of myself. We'll just do it real quick. Mm-hmm. Right. And then a million people do that. And next thing you know, there's a lot of painters that don't have a job. I don't know. It's just,
you're right. Because we're a society of, we want it now. You know, so it makes it easier. In anything easier, we pop out and we have out more. And then it becomes too easy that we lose that the time that goes into something is where the heart is of it. And it goes into any of it. I just had a thought on that. I can't remember.
My concern is it's going to get corrupted because of money, right? Yeah. So as soon as like Marvel and those guys are like, why pay the writers? We can just do this digitally. And boy, that's a dangerous road to go down too. You know, like you said, they could say, make it like someone's, whatever, Tom McFarlane drew this, or Todd McFarlane, whatever. And how long till that's like where everyone's going to be out of a job. I'm going to be out of a job someday because I sit at a computer all day and I'm not the most efficient thing there is, you know?
Well, we're going to be the ones that are plugging in the wires.
Until the robot arm is invented. And
I saw a lawnmower that had AI, and it was like this little remote control thing. And I was like, wow, that's really cool.
I have one. My neighbors have one down the road.
They do.
And I was watching this thing because I was driving back and forth to your house. I think it was around your kid's graduation party. Oh, sure. And I was going, it's a Roomba for the yard.
Yeah.
And I'm going, you've got to be kidding.
It's crazy.
No. You know, it's one thing if for, you know, older individuals that, okay, my dad's getting old. He can't push the lawnmower anymore. Okay. That's something to have that so that the yard gets maintained or whatever. But then how much lazier have we gotten? What about the 13-year-old boy that's supposed to be going around and going, hey, can I mow your yard, mister? You know, and where's the culture in that? We keep on losing little bits because life gets easier, but
I saw this lose thing. Parts. You guys know Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I saw this thing on him, and he was talking about how the automobile just ruined the horse and buggy industry. Mm. Like, people were selling, like, whips, and they're like, I don't know, whatever goes into that. Wagons, everything. Think of all the stuff created for horses gone because people have automobiles. And he says it's going to be like that with automatic cars. All these things are going to disappear, and industries always change. And you think about the records, the industry, and the CD industry and all that. And things are always changing. And AI is like a big thing that's going to change us. And we just got to figure out how we're going to manage it and how, I mean, hopefully we don't let it go. Because it could damage us, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. I always wonder whether or not it's going to be something that'll be beneficial for us, that we'll go too far with it, or whether or not we'll take it to a point and then realize we miss what we lost or what before it's completely gone. Kind of like, you know, we've gone from records to tapes to CDs to digital. And now you see a lot of people going back to the records. There's a sound, there's a certain, you know, depth to the music on a record rather than the digital. And you kind of wonder if maybe people might go that route, but I think it'll be so ingrained into everything.
I don't think we'll be able to. We'll just have to figure out where we fit in. And by the time we are consciously aware, I mean, I think we have concerns, but the people creating this, it's about money. It's about how fast can I get this.
Vanity. It's about money. It's about what would that new Nirvana sound like about me or about whatever.
You know? But see, and that's where I wonder whether or not, like, the industry with making money, how could they be making money on something that I'm designing and I'm creating on my computer at home? I'm not purchasing the program, but it's like a lot of that stuff is so leaked. If it's AI, can it find itself anyways out on the computer and out on the internet that it would do it anyways? I don't know.
It's so fast. It's just hold on to your hat. It's so fast. It's already smarter than we are. Goes to
the programmer or whatever.
Mm.
But eventually, if it gets like true sentience, I mean that ultimately that's the biggest fear is now it doesn't need us.
Right.
It's got the. I mean, how many Marvel characters live inside computers? Right?
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing too, is if we're just consumers, if we have this program that's creating for us and we're not creators anymore, we're just consumers, we're going to be dead weight eventually.
Yeah.
Into
a
logical mind. Oh, what do we need these? They don't do anything. Well, they just consume. They don't.
They're the copper tops.
Right. Oh, man, I hope we don't get that far.
I think the danger in AI is damaging our control of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, for me, a positive note is, it might be a little bit dark, but I was thinking, you know, when I die, maybe my kids can scan in or upload whatever my art they can create a comic book that I drew, and so I live on within that AI comic that looks like I drew it, and that my son gets this is like my dad's drawing.
Right.
I mean, that's the only positive thing I pull out of that, you know.
that is actually a really cool thought. I mean, when you look back at any of the old stuff, I mean, back in the early 1900s and stuff like that, if we had the ability to scan those and then create something out of it, an old movie or something that would be more personable for that individual so that, you know, they would have that of you, that would be really
cool. But it does
cool
go back to vanity.
Yeah.
You know, but
my boys are just going to roll me down the hill and let wolves eat me.
Yeah. I won't let them
do that. No, because this artwork, they're not really going to want.
I actually have plans to stuff them next to Steve back here. Yeah. So, you know, thanks. We'll have, you know, a Jeff.
So I come back next, there's another money there.
Jeff got out of hand.
Hair sticking out the back. That'd
be great.
How are we doing on time, Johnny?
You're at like 1:15.
Yeah, we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah, well, I could talk to Tim all day because that's honestly, I can tell you got comfortable with talking with us because your mic wasn't kept moving away from you because you're just like, hey, yeah, this is what it is.
What I was saying.
You're good.
I never lose.
Okay,
that's why he's over there watching the mics.
In any moment like this, what do I say to Jeff? Don't worry.
Don't worry, Daddy.
Daddy will take care of it. Don't you worry.
True facts. All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for joining us today. I love having you on, and we'll have you on more often. We're going to get together and hang out and shoot the breeze. But for all of you, go check out, will you give me that Instagram
one more Odland, time? It's at Odland Tim.
At Odland Tim. Go check that out. It has the creature from the Black Lagoon as his profile picture, so you'll pick that off right away. Go check out his art. Go get a commission yourself from him. It's worth it. So worth it. And go check us out on all your other socials, podcasting and TikToketing and all that fun jazz. Thanks again for joining us. And remember, it's fun to be a kid, even if you aren't one, eh? Take care.
Bye, bitch.
Are we going to have that at every ending? I love it.
Absolutely.